Hey, back on the show, Billy Lucci, Tex Eggs. What's up, brother?
Wait, what did I call you? Southeastern Conference Michael.
Yes, sir.
Formal edition.
The biggest game, I think without a doubt, this weekend in the Southeastern Conference. A&M once again. It's funny, isn't it, Billy? The more you win, the bigger the games get. And A&M's going on the road to Missouri. I think this is a big trap game. What do you think?
Yeah, I do. I think in a lot of ways, too, because low-key, Missouri's got a lot to play for. You know, nobody's talking about them because no one's expecting them to win out. You know, you see some teams on that schedule, you go, okay, but if they were to win Saturday, then all of a sudden I think everyone would take a completely different look at Mizzou. So they've got that going for them. I think playing the backup quarterback, I know everybody's saying third string, but he's been the backup since, what, week 1, quarter 1, quarter two. So playing the backup QB, I don't want to say third string because that would insinuate that he's been, like, not getting any reps with the ones or twos all year. But it's still it's not Bo Prabula. It's not the guy that started every game since the opener. So there's that working. And, yeah, A&M's rolling. I think both teams did well to have a bye week last week for opposite reasons. I think Missouri would have been in the absolute tank following the injury and then that loss at Vandy, the way they lost it. And I think that A&M was certainly flying high after going into Baton Rouge and playing the way they did. That was a pretty emotional victory. I'm sure the celebration carried over into College Station, just enjoying that one. So both teams probably were served well by the bye. But then when you factor that that's in Columbia, Missouri, it's a place that I don't think, even though they're going to go there next year, I don't think any of these guys that are playing have been. You know, I don't think hardly anybody on the team has gone and played in Missouri. There might be a couple of exceptions. So it's an unfamiliar place. So it definitely feels like a trap game, Mike, but so did Auburn in the game after Notre Dame. So did Arkansas. A lot of people were picking LSU to knock off A&M because they were desperate. Florida was coming off that big win over Texas, and Napier was trying to save his job. They went into South Bend with a Notre Dame team that was 0-1 and couldn't afford a loss. Come to find out they could because they're Notre Dame, but at the time. So they've gotten they've shown a lot of maturity of handling these different types of tests, home, road, good teams, bad teams, you know, whatever, hungry teams, desperate teams. They've shown a real maturity level, I think, in terms of just being themselves every week, regardless of the opponent, and kind of adapting in game to what the game dictates, whether it's a defensive struggle, whether it's a shootout, whether it's a blowout, whether it's something in between. They've kind of handled – I can't remember covering an A&M team that – has won games in such a wide variety of ways. It's almost like every week it's something different. So I wouldn't expect that part to change. And I do think they can get out of there with a win, but I think it's going to be a really tough football game. I do. Some of these games I could have seen a world where the Aggies blew them out. Sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. This one I have a hard time picturing that because of that Missouri defense, running game, and crowd.
Mm-hmm. And what is – the conversation, I'm just curious, in College Station, is it more about Missouri this week, or is it more about the playoff and being the highest ranked SEC team and eyeing the SEC championship? I'm just kind of curious if, and I'm sure Coach Elko, he doesn't give a damn about any of that, but I'm just wondering, I mean, that's got to filter down to the players if the town's talking about the playoff.
It's mixed, right? Like, I think Mike Elko keeps it from filtering down to the players. Like, I think his approach, it's not like he's trying to shield them. You know, these coaches that just do this and everybody's like in the cocoon. And I think that's bullshit. I think it doesn't work. I think it ultimately turns the team against the fans if they lose a game or two or if they have a bad season. And then the coach starts getting angry at the fans. Like, it just creates a divide. And you're not shielding them from anything. I think that's naive. I think that's 15 years ago thinking, you know, those days are over. So I think Elko does a great job of making them aware of like, hey, you've earned this credit, this adulation, you've earned this ranking. But at the same time, he'll tell them it doesn't mean shit. And what he's telling them this week is we did this last year. Now, I think there's a big difference in this 8-0 and that 7-1. We could talk for 10 minutes about it. It's really not even close. But they did struggle down the home stretch last year when they had everything out in front of them. And so he's been real adamant about that and not letting them lose sight of the fact that, like, hey, it was, you know, we have to fix what we didn't fix last year and we have to keep our eyes on the prize. So I don't think that part matters. I think it was the playoff stuff. But, man, if I talk about the rankings and hypotheticals, I've got more Aggies that I think that they're on the football team, think that they're going to take the field Saturday, that say, you know, we can't talk about it. All we can talk about is Missouri. I think you can definitely talk about both, and you should, because it's a really big game. It's one of what? How many games pit two ranked teams this weekend? It can't be many. BYU and Tech, A&M, Mizzou. Is there even another one in the SEC?
No, not this week.
Yeah, so I don't – oh, Oregon, Iowa. It's a short list this week for sure, though. So definitely one of the biggest games in the country, like you said. And look, you could have said that about LSU, A&M last week. You could have said that about A&M, Notre Dame earlier in the season. They've played in some big ones this year in terms of spotlight, and they've responded each time.
What do you think is the challenge of going up against a freshman quarterback in Matt Zollers, who was really highly touted? He's got the big arm, and, you know, obviously you don't want your first start to come against an undefeated red-hot A&M team, but at the same time, they're not going to have much film on him. I heard Coach Elko say, heck, we're going back to the high school tape because we just don't have much on him. And for all the good things, and I don't, this is going to seem like I'm slandering Bo Prabula, but I think defense has really started to figure out Missouri with him in there to where they knew he couldn't hurt him with his arm. I don't think that's the case for Zoller. So what do you think is the biggest challenge for A&M facing this unknown quarterback?
I think it's what you said, like what Elko said, you don't have a lot of tape. Fortunately, he threw, 20 passes in that game against Vandy. So that, you know, that's not nothing. But when he's – I would love to play a quarterback that's never really played. I don't care how talented. But when he's at home and has had a bye week for them to put in, like, a package he's comfortable with and that fits his skill set really well, I think that changes the equation quite a bit and slants it in Missouri's favor. I think the way you get to Zollers would be you got to slow down Ahmad Hardy. You can't let them live in second and six, second and four, third and three and two. You have to stop the running game and slow them down. And if you do that, that's when I think Mike Elko can do all the things that he does and what's made A&M so great. They're number one in the country in terms of third down defense. And there's a reason why. And part of that is the pressures he dials up. Part of that is the ability of Cassius Howell and some of these guys to get after the quarterback. They also lead the country. They led the country in sacks until their bye week. But sacks per game, they lead the country. When he can turn that loose and throw all that confusion at you and all that post-snap changing of looks and coverages and things, that's where you have a huge advantage versus that inexperienced QB. But you've got to put him in that position by winning first and second down against one of the best running backs in the country.
Any concerns about the Missouri defense? Because I think they're probably one of the more underrated in the conference. You mentioned how good A&M is on third down. Missouri, I think, is number five on third down in the country. This is a really good defense. I think they can beat over the top, though. So, I mean, I would imagine Marcel's going to take his shots. I think that's to me personally, I think that's the way Missouri, if they win this game, it's A&M's unable to connect on those deep shots. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and you know, yes, if they're connecting on the deep shots, I think they really open this thing up, and they'll look like, wow, look what they did against a really good defense. And I think people around the country, again, will go, this – remember, and I know it was without Whit Weeks, but I don't know who's acting like Whit Weeks was a first-round draft pick, okay? Like, I think he's a really good college linebacker. I'm not – but, like, they were acting like, you know, you had – Junior Seau or Mike Singletary or you know, God knows, you know, Ray Lewis sitting there in the middle of that defense. That's still, it was a good LSU defense. And you look at what LSU's given up in every game this year, and A&M went out there on the road and scored 49. If they could do that again to Missouri, I think that's a real statement. I agree with you. To do that, they're going to have to hit over the top. And when we think of that, we think of just those deep balls, but I also think of like the intermediate to deep, you know, crossing routes. And those are the things where if you get the ball to 1, 7, and even 3 now in the last couple of weeks, you get the ball to those guys on the run, and they'll cause real problems for any defense, as they've shown all year. And I could see this being one of those bust out games for Mario Craver. He's had plenty of good ones since Notre Dame, but not that like monster game. I think there's an opportunity for him to do that this week. But they're going to have to protect Marcel. Missouri has a really good pass rush. You mentioned a top five third down defense. They're also, I think, fifth in the country in total defense. Listen, there's a case to be made that this is the best defense they've played this year. I mean, I think Florida's pretty good defensively. I think LSU is pretty good defensively. Auburn maybe has been the best they've seen so far. And that was a 16-10 game. Now, I will say the Aggies, I think, outgained them like 3-1. It was like 450 yards, but they just kept having to settle for field goals. They had a touchdown call back, and I think 13 penalties in that one for 100-something yards. So it was a little misleading. But I'd say that was probably the most comparable defense they've seen. So, I you know, in no world do I think this is going to be an easy contest for A&M. I think it's, again, Texas fans would disagree. It might be the best defense they play. I think by year's end it will be, just in terms of statistics. Now, Texas might have the better depth, fewer weaknesses maybe, but this is a really good one.
Do you take into consideration at all things like this, where we have a guy, he does like the weather report for the games. He says it's going to be around 40 degrees late in the game, fourth quarter. I mean, how do you think A&M would handle that?
I mean, I think they would handle it. I think they would handle it. I mean, it wasn't cold at Notre Dame, but it was chilly. They had to deal with all that rain delay stuff at Arkansas all day, rain delay, rain. And then, last year, Marcel went on the road in that driving rainstorm against Florida. So, yeah, like, are they a cold weather team? No. Has Missouri practiced or played in the cold weather yet? I don't really think so. So, what would get me is if it was super windy. Mm-hmm. If it was super windy and then teams had to rely more on, like, running game. But what we're not talking about, I feel like, Mike, is and I get why, because I'm sitting here talking like I think it's going to be a really close game. But, you know, for as good as the Missouri defense is, that A&M offense, I think, is really good. Like, we went through that without talking about that Aggie run game or what Marcel's done the last couple weeks in terms of with his legs. He had 100-plus against LSU. If it was not for a real horrific holding call. And by the way, I think this is hurting A&M, and I think it's so stupid with the committee. You know, I heard him talk about the Aggie defense, and I don't think the Aggie defense has been as good as Ohio State's, and I haven't studied up on Indiana's as much, but their statistics say so. I'm not saying to say, well, A&M's defense has been better than the Hoosiers or the Buckeyes, but I'm going, the Aggies gave up a last-minute touchdown to LSU up 49-18. Literally in the last minute. They gave up They had a holding penalty wipe out a 55-yard touchdown run by Reed that would have put the Aggies up by 17 with like 4 minutes left against Arkansas. I'm just wondering how these little things are affecting, you know, where they were up 31-3 against Mississippi State in the fourth quarter when State threw a long touchdown pass. And in fairness, a couple of those were against the ones. But like some of these games, they're blowing teams out or are about to blow a team out. Like say Arkansas. And Juracek's on that selection committee. They win that game 45-42. If Reed's touchdown counts, it's what, 50? What it was, they would have gone up 17 at the point. I think 52 to whatever. So I do think there's something in there that, like, when you're actually watching the games, you see, man, this offense has been. Look, to go down and score 21 on three drives to open the game against Florida. I think they scored touchdowns on six of their first seven against Arkansas, and then a 35-0 run to open the second half against LSU. I think they went on a 31-0 run against Mississippi State. There's some stuff in there that's really eye-opening, and you notice some of those numbers outside of the Arkansas game include a lot of defense too. The A&M defense is interesting in this game because they've been great. And then they've struggled, you know, you particularly look at Notre Dame and Arkansas, but they've been really good in some of these other football games. You got to think, Mike, that Coach Elko somehow has managed to get his team to realize that the head of the selection committee went on national TV and said their defense is what's separating Indiana and Ohio State because it's the A&M defense that is questionable and why they're sitting there at third. So I'm just saying that that would be something interesting to watch as they go against an offense that, for as good as that defense is, I noticed all the Mizzou fans, when I'm sitting there saying how close I think the game's going to be, they're the first ones to tell me, well, it won't be because we can't score. And I do agree. I would rather Prabula at this point and have the consistency of it. But they're the ones correcting me, not the other. It's not the A&M fans that are cocky and arrogant. It's the Missouri fans that are down on their offense. But, again, great defense, great running game, playing at home. I think it's going to be one of the better SEC games. I mean, just ask Alabama. You just got to go up there and find a way to win like Bama did and like A&M's done. You know, Mike, A&M had a 10-game losing streak on the road when Elko got here. 10-game road losing streak. Now, they lost a couple to end last year without Moss, but since he's gotten here, they've won Swamp. And these are all Reed wins, too. They've run – Marcel's won in Gainesville. He's won in Starkville, where A&M has not had a great deal of history. He's won in Fayetteville, and he's won in South Bend. And now Death Valley in Baton Rouge. So – Elko and them have squashed that narrative. That doesn't mean you're just going to win every road game. We understand that. But that was an anchor that was weighing down this program in SEC play especially. And they have ripped that one up and thrown it away. And whether they win or lose, they go prepared. And they show up ready to play on the road, which, you know, that's what great teams have to do, is show up ready to play and win. And like it or not, and I think we all like it, that's where A&M's at now. You're now to the point of you're trying to prove you're great. You're trying to get to Atlanta, and to do that, you probably, barring Georgia losing a game to either Texas or Mississippi State, and if it's Texas, Katie bar the door when the Aggies and Longhorns play at DKR, but barring Georgia losing a game, you know, A&M's going to have to run the table to get to Atlanta, most likely. So if you want to do that, you have to be great. If you're great, then you go win games on the road like they're going to play Saturday at Missouri.
Hey, I'm so glad you said that, because in this era of expanded playoff, it seems like the SEC championship game is as diminished as it's ever been. But all I'm hearing from Aggies are, Can we make Atlanta? Like, they really want to go. How bad do you think A&M wants to make that first trip to the SEC championship?
Some don't, And when they say that, I completely disagree. You're an SEC guy. You're SEC Mike. I've been in the SEC now covering it for 14 years. It's a long time. That means a lot, especially if they don't, you know, I think they'll have it for a long time. I know, like, I saw somebody like Joel Klatt was saying they won't, and I haven't dug in to try to find out what the likelihood of either is. But to me, it's like you want to be a certified, stamped member of this league. A, at least go to Atlanta, but really to me is win an SEC title. You want to be in the real club, win an SEC championship. I mean, who are the expansion teams, Mike? Like, I don't know the answer, but, like, has Arkansas ever won one since they got in the league?
They've been, but they've never won it.
Has South Carolina ever won one?
Nope.
Since they've been in? You look, and I would like to see how long it's been since Ole Miss, Mississippi State, a lot of these teams now, like Tennessee hasn't won it since A&M's been in there. I don't think Florida, I think since they've been in the league, the only teams that have won it are Bama, Georgia.
LSU.
Once LSU in 14 years, and Auburn once. I think that's it in 14 years. So, you know, you want to be like a certified member. Go win this thing, and there's an opportunity to do that this year. And to me, that matters. And I would also push back on people that go, no, you don't want to play the extra game. Well, there's a world where, number one, if A&M goes in 12-0, even with a loss, they're probably not falling out of that top four. And certainly with the win, they're probably the number two overall seed, if not one. Like, to me, if, like, you know, one or two, whatever, probably two. You're not playing an extra game if you do that. If you go in at 12-0, you're either going to finish probably two or four, and you're getting a bye. So you're playing December 6th, 7th, or whatever, and then you're not playing again until New Year's. So, yeah, there's a world where you get in there at like 11-1 and lose and fall out and host a game at Kyle Field. But to me, like, the argument that you have to play an extra game, I don't think that's true, barring some weird, you know, tie break that you get in at 11-1 and lose and maybe drop out of that top four. But more realistically, to get there, you got to win out starting Saturday. And if you do that, I don't think you're falling out of that top four. So you're not playing an extra game before the quarterfinals. You're just skipping right to the quarterfinals. So I think fans are wrong if they're worried about, like, wear and tear and playing extra.
And obviously it really helps A&M that Notre Dame keeps winning. And it, based on their schedule, that's likely to continue. So that only props up the Aggies even more. Speaking of being propped up, though, are you buying Texas that they're an elite team and barely getting by Kentucky, barely getting by State? And yeah, they handled Vanderbilt, but then they damn near gave it up. Are you buying that Texas is an elite team now?
Have you figured out yet, Mike? And I know the answer to this. Have you figured out that these people only deal in extremes? Like, they were ready to, and they'll say they weren't. And they'll say, oh, no, it was the media. They propped Arch up as the god of football. It wasn't us. We weren't saying he was a lock for New York. We weren't making fun of Marcel Reed at the mere concept that he could even be anywhere close to Arch Manning. We weren't ripping Jordan Rodgers apart for saying that he had shown nothing yet to be anointed. That wasn't us. That was the national media. That wasn't us 3 weeks ago that were ready, that were saying it wouldn't be the worst thing if he didn't play because we didn't think he was any good. That wasn't us. That was the national media. The Athletic wrote that article about him. We weren't down on him. You and I sat here and said, let him earn it. He has not shown it yet. He will develop. It's an inexperienced O-line. The Texas fans this year have dealt only in extremes. And so to answer your question, I will take the non-extreme answer and say, I'm not buying Texas as this team that everyone in the country should be talking about. All of a sudden, like, these people around the country just want to force feed Burnt Orange and Bevo and Arch and Texas. As soon as they show any sign of life, they want to thrust them. Who was it doing the game? I don't know if it was McDonough. But all of a sudden, like, they're literally kind of talking about Arch pushing his way back into the Heisman race by throwing a bunch of screen passes against Vandy. So can I just say, like, be real honest here and say, I think they're showing noticeable improvement, and I think they're starting to believe, and I think a team can have a turning point in a season, and that late hit on that guy at Mississippi State, who's one of my least favorite players in college football history now, because that game was over, but that's a play that can turn a season around, and it for now it has. But I think there's a fair way to look at Texas, and that is that they're getting better. I think that's evident from the last like six quarters. But there's also a fair way to look at them where you don't have to throw them back up to the front of the line, where you can say, all right, we're one quarter removed from them giving up like 21 points and 250 yards in a quarter to Vandy. But that one I asterisk because they had a lot of injuries in the secondary. But when everybody was celebrating them last Sunday, they were 8 days removed. They didn't just beat Mississippi State. They needed a miracle to beat a team that had lost 15 straight SEC. A miracle. They were if that late hit doesn't happen, they might lose by 24, Mike. And they were 2 weeks removed from Mark Stoops going, you know, just imploding on the goal line on those two. So to me, when I watch them, they're like, they've shown that they're really kind of like playing level with Kentucky and Mississippi State and Vandy, although I think they controlled that Vandy game more. I want to give them more credit for that one. But, I mean, that does not merit or warrant being thrown all the way up in the mix. And look, Texas fans have been on me lately about, you know, A&M's SEC schedule and they're playing all the fired coaches. They played a big role in firing those coaches. But I also won't sit here and tell you that the Aggies have played a murderer's row. But I will tell you, if you've watched those games, you know, there's been a level of game control there that I don't think people are wanting to acknowledge. And we talked about that earlier. There's been a level there where it's like they've just pulled away, or, you know, Arkansas looked really close, but Arkansas never had the ball to take the lead that whole game. You know, there was just, and that was the closest one. Florida took it out to 17. You know, we talked about all the other ones. So, but do I think that's a murderer's row of a schedule? No, I don't. But I think at the end of the day, when you throw in Missouri on the road and Texas on the road, Notre Dame on the road, Death Valley, it's a plenty tough schedule where it's actually going to help them, not hurt them come playoff selection time.
Yeah, it is so comical. Arch Heisman talk. Again, I don't, you know, all that to begin with was crazy. But if they have a Heisman candidate, it's that punt returner, Niblett. Don't punt to that guy. They have a losing record in the SEC. You know what?
He's unbelievable. You got, and look, their defense is, I've been arguing with Amanda on our podcast, you know, one of our favorite people, but we've been going back and forth with, you know, I'm not criticizing their defense. I think it's really good, but the performance Saturday against Vandy notwithstanding, I think they may have to be elite for Texas to go beat like Gunnar Stockton and Georgia, and for Texas to beat, you know, Reed and A&M. Those are two really good offenses lately. And I think their defenses are enough to really give that Texas O-line problems that Vandy couldn't. And Vandy couldn't give them any issue. They put up no resistance on the perimeter. I think those type defenses, you know, for Texas to win those games, that defense is, or Longhorn defense, will have to play at an elite level. That's my question. Simmons, Hill, they're terrific players, but I think the defense will have to be absolutely locked in those two games. And I think they've been really good, but I think there's been a lot that's happened I think we're forgetting that Mississippi State scored 38 on them in that fourth quarter against Vandy, and Kentucky's gained 400-something yards. And so really good, yeah, elite. I just – we don't know yet. My point is that they're going to have to be, in my opinion.
Hey, last thing for you, Billy. Really appreciate your time. What do you think Lane Kiffin will end up doing? And can you believe what a disaster this LSU situation seems to be? Because I think even they could have gotten anybody they wanted, just about, Lane Kiffin included. And the way things currently are in Baton Rouge, I don't know any qualified candidate that would touch that job.
I'm biased because Scott Woodward's a good friend. Okay, so we've stayed friends since he left. I just think the world of him, right, as a person. But it's business, I know there's politics there at LSU, and you got one guy on one side of the line, another on the other, and you got, you hired Brian Kelly, and it's the SEC football. If you're an AD and your football coach fails, you're all of a sudden in the crosshairs. So I get the business. But like you talk about, the mess that's gone on really since A&M went in there and emptied out that stadium, which, trust me, for all the crap I hear over the years and Aggies hear from LSU fans, it does feel good to be 3-1 in the last four against them. It does feel good to win 5 out of the last 9 after losing the first 6 in the SEC. It does feel good to finally see your team go into a place I respect the hell out of as an atmosphere, the fans in Baton Rouge, and clear that place out. But I got too many friends at LSU to my thing is, if you're a fan in the SEC, most of us have been there. I mean, hell, Bama's been there. Bama was there for how long? LSU was there for how long? Like, everyone's been there. Auburn lives there. You know, someone say A&M lives there. Hopefully the Aggies are coming out of that, right? But here's what I said the other day. Someone asked me, what are the best jobs available? I think Burns said Auburn. I feel like Auburn just stays in this state of churn since I've been following them. So I was Arkansas 4th, Auburn 3rd. And I said normally I would put Florida 2, LSU 1. But because of all this and right now, I would flip-flop that. I still think LSU is going to end up with a hell of a hire because coaches still sometimes can go – so I've seen it a million times, right, where they go somewhere – against their better judgment. And usually it turns out that, hey, you should have trusted your judgment versus your knee jerk. But someone's going to go there because it's going to be – they're going to get paid. Everybody's won there except Brian Kelly. And so I think they're going to end up – but I think they really have damaged themselves. And in terms of Lane Kiffin – yeah, if he leaves Oxford, I could certainly see him going to Florida over LSU. And so if that's the big prize for both of them, that would be interesting. I don't know, man. LSU's an interesting time for them, and I've said this before. They've had one season since the Aggies joined the SEC of less than 3 losses. I know Ed O won a natty, and that was one of the best teams I've ever seen. But I think they need to really hire a damn good football coach for them right now and almost take a page out of A&M's book. And A&M's made a lot of bad hires, so I'm not saying this as some kind of pedestal by God. Of course not. But you're asking me about LSU, and I'm just they need to find their version of Elko in terms of not just the fit because he knows Louisiana and he talks with a great Cajun accent, but I mean just the fit of what do you want there at LSU. And I think you want a badass recruiter, but someone that can really knows how to get the most out of 2025, 2026, modern, current NIL era college athletes. But also LSU to me needs substance back, toughness to go with all that style, those cool ass uniforms and them singing neck at the game and the music they play on the kickoff, it gets you all amped up and boozy and everything they do there. Like, it's all great. The eye on the middle of the field, I think, is badass. Welcome to death. All that stuff, right? But they need to go back and get, like, when A&M came into the SEC, and certainly before that, that was one of the toughest, most physical, intimidating programs in college football, year in and year out, year in and year out. They came in here and they did it to Johnny and Mike Evans and a number one O-line in the country in 2012. They just, that's what they were about. And they lost that, you know, some of my buddies that are former LSU players will say they lost it when they lost Tommy Moffitt. But I think it was a gradual deterioration there, and they need to get that back, because all you do at LSU is recruit tough football players. That's all that exists in that state. You almost have to, like, coach it out of them, you know, for them not to be. So I think that's what pissed the LSU people off so badly the other night, because the Aggies were the ones intimidating, and the Aggies were the ones with the skill athletes making all the plays down the field. And you know, it just – I was there when they beat A&M 50-7 with Burrow and Jefferson and Jamar Chase, like all those guys. To watch A&M be up 49-18 on them in the fourth quarter and have Concepcion and Craver and a true freshman, you know, running back, and Jamarian Morrow and Marcel Reed, and then Cassius Howell, you know, jawing at their linemen all night. Like, that doesn't sit well with LSU people. I know, you know, we know the Louisiana fans, the LSU fan, like, so I think to them, to me, like I said, find your Mike Elko in terms of, like, enough relatability to the players and that fan base where you're not talking down on them like Brian Kelly seemed to do, but also, you know, it's you got to have that level of toughness, because it's just sitting there in that state waiting for you to have, like, a tough, physical, intimidating football
okay
program.
You heard it here first. Nick Saban back to LSU.
LSU expert Billy.
All right, Billy, thank you so much.
This is my opinion. I know enough people over there to know that I think most of them would agree with that.
Before you go, tell my audience how to follow you and how to find all your work over at Tex Eggs.
Yeah, it's Billy at texeggs.com. If you want to, who emails it? Please don't email me, actually. I should have never said that. Jesus. It's Twitter at Billy Lucci, LUCCI. And that same thing on Instagram. You can see all my little vacation and game pictures, I guess, concerts. But at Billy Lucci on all that, and then TexAgs right here behind us at texags.com. Go on there, pay for a subscription like all the Longhorns do, or you can just go on there, and there's a lot of free stuff to enjoy and intake as well when your team lines up and plays the Aggies.
All right, Billy, I'll cut it right there. Thank you so much.